The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Robert Morley, your host for the day, and you are listening to KPCG.FM or 101.3 on the FM dial, live here from Herbert W. Armstrong College, the campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. If you have any comments on today's program, the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever you'd like, please feel free to email those in to td@kpcg.fm. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. I'm happy to be here with you today and to be given the opportunity to talk with you. Your regular host, Stephen Fleury, has graciously asked me to fill in for him today, so I do appreciate that. For our regular listeners who know that this program is typically broadcast from our sister campus in Edstone, you might be interested in knowing that our co-workers over there, fellow students over there, are currently back in the Stone Age without electricity, so they're having to rough it over there. The Edstone campus is currently out of power. They're undergoing a major electrical fix to the line that's coming into the main campus building there. So something to be thinking about and to keep in your prayers as this work powers forward. And in case you didn't catch that there, I said this work powers forward. That was a pun that was to be intended. That's my one attempt at humor for the day. So I'll stay away from that. I've been told I'm not very funny. Okay, so yesterday, President-elect Donald Trump gave a press conference, and I believe this was his first conference in 167 days. So this was a much anticipated event. There was a lot of media excitement about this, and it didn't disappoint. There was a lot of controversy that came out. You heard there, even at the top of the hour on the news items, there was controversy around this fake news and CNN publishing this unsubstantiated report, these claims from a supposed ex-British intelligence agent. And lately we've had a lot of stories about that fake news and this push by, you know, the Washington Post and some of these other big media outlets that are really trying to encourage Google and Facebook and some of those giant tech companies to start censoring the news and determining for themselves what is real news and what isn't news and what you hear and what you can find for news. And this is some pretty scary stuff that's starting to come out here, especially when you think about the dominant role companies like Google play in determining what you get to see and what you get to hear. And really, if you start digging into what's happening here, you quickly find out that what's going on is we're having an attack on free speech. There is attack. There's a movement to limit free speech in this country and for certain individuals to determine what you can and can't hear. And it really is, you know, just a diabolical thing that's happening here. And it is something that seems to be intensifying. And what I find probably most ironic about it is that CNN, one of the biggest purveyors of fake news, this fake news scare that's been going on, CNN was the company that's been going out of its way the most to publish sensational and the most obviously fake news item yet. I'm talking about this dossier that supposedly described President-elect Trump's activities in Russia and the activities of some of his associates. And if you look at what's in that supposed report, I mean, it's just so ridiculous that you can't even, I mean, any self-respecting news agency should have taken a look at that and said, this is completely ridiculous. It's obviously fake. We're not going to run with it. I mean, even the New York Times, an outlet that is generally hostile to the right and to President-elect Trump, they refused to report on it. They said it was filled with inaccuracies and it was unsubstantiated, so known errors in it, known lies. Nice way of saying known lies. And they wouldn't publish it, but here we have CNN and BuzzFeed picking up in the media, NPR just running with those sorts of things. So a lot of this hubbub really is self self-serving, and these media dinosaurs like the Washington Post are doing everything they can to try to stay relevant. They know that their subscriptions are failing, their readership is falling, so they're trying to make themselves relevant here. They're trying to knock the competition, this so-called alt-right media or the alternative media or the right, more right-wing, right-leaning media. But the reality is they're losing readership because they are the purveyors in many cases of fake news, and people just see through that kind of thing. Anyway, in the midst of all this fake news junk and the Russian hacking stuff that has been in the media here, the president did give some pretty dogmatic and some pretty dramatic indications on the future of America, and in particular, his view on how the economy should be managed. And it's some interesting stuff. So we need to take a look at that. And I'd like to play a soundbite here from the president's press conference that he gave yesterday. So if we could please play that first soundbite now.
We've had some great news over the last couple of weeks. I've been quite active, I guess you could say, in an economic way for the country. A lot of car companies are going to be moving in. We have other companies. Big news is going to be announced over the next couple of weeks about companies that are going to be building in the Midwest. You saw it yesterday, Fiat, Chrysler, big factory going to be built in this country as opposed to another country. Ford just announced that they stopped plans for a $1 billion plant in Mexico, and they're going to be moving into Michigan and expanding very substantially an existing plant. I appreciate that from Ford. I appreciate it very much from Fiat Chrysler. I hope that General Motors will be following, and I think they will be. I think a lot of people will be following.
So there's a lot of positive things here that are happening in America, according to the president-elect. There's a lot of positive momentum, and the economic outlook, the economic sentiment, it's currently positive. And I think he's right on that. I think the president-elect has a good read on that. There is some positive momentum here and some positive things that are taking place, and convincing these big manufacturers to keep jobs in America, to stay in America, makes good economic sense. That's a positive thing for the nation, and you've seen Donald Trump make some good progress on this, and you have to give him the kudos where he deserves them for those things. And he's been very effective at even shaming companies into staying. He's had some pretty well-publicized tweets that have gone out, and he's has a massive Twitter following, I think around 20 million people, and these are influential people, many of them, the elites out there. And I think it was just over a week ago where he you probably noticed or heard that he Twitter-shamed General Motors and went after them for moving their factories down to Mexico. And when he tweeted that, the stock price of General Motors just plunged. It fell through the floor. And that's happened before, as he's Twitter shamed some of these companies, you know, Boeing and some of these others. They are feeling the consequences of their actions. So these big companies are feeling the economic impacts already. But, you know, as much progress as Donald Trump has made, reality is eventually he's going to have to start backing up, you know, his words with action. And if he doesn't do that, well, then all the Twitter shaming in the world may not mean very much at all. Those companies are just going to go back to doing what they were doing. So if you look at what the president has to do, there's really two approaches that he can take. There's a good way to accomplish what he'd like to do, and a bad way. And depending on the direction he goes, there's going to be some big implications for this nation. Of course, the good way involves, you know, determining what are the causes of you know, America's outsourcing, for losing factory jobs, for factories folding and going under, and high employment. What are the causes behind these problems? And then addressing those causes and identifying, you know, the moral issues that go along with that have led to so much wealth destruction in America, those moral issues that lead to the higher costs of doing business in America, finding out why we have these problems and dealing with that. And then, of course, there's the bad way of dealing with our problems, and that is to just paper over those problems, or to just address the symptoms of those problems. And usually, you know, in our system that we have today, this involves some politician creating a new law that deals with the effect, you know, like some company. So, for example, companies that are hiring workers in other countries to build things. Okay, well, let's just pass a law. Let's pass a law that makes it illegal for companies to hire, you know, a certain percentage of foreign workers. Or, you know, some of our companies are laying off workers because the competition can produce products more inexpensively. So instead of going to the cause of this and trying to fix it, let's just pass a law. Let's just tax any of the goods that are coming from that country. Let's pass some tariffs. Let's subsidize our companies, perhaps, or increase corporate welfare. I mean, these are the kind of things that are easy. We'll just pass a law. We'll just say that you can't do this anymore. And politicians try to do that, and sometimes it can work for a while, but it always causes bigger problems. So there's a good way to address these problems by looking at the causes, and there's a bad way of just dealing with the effects. And unfortunately, that's America's history. We like to deal with the effects. We like to take the easy road to solve these problems. And that's what I would like to talk about today with you. How is Donald Trump going to make America great again? How is he going to make this nation great again? How is he going to deliver on all those promises? And as he does that, what will be the cost? Because believe it or not, there is always a cost. There is no such thing as a free lunch. There is no such thing as no consequences. Actions have consequences, depending what the president-elect does here. Could have some pretty big impacts on you and me and on this nation. So let's hear from our soon-to-be president again, Donald Trump. This is soundbite number two. Josh, if we could hear that, please.
I think a lot of industries are going to be coming back. We have to get our drug industry coming back. Our drug industry has been disastrous. They're leaving left and right. They supply our drugs, but they don't make them here to a large extent. And the other thing we have to do is create new bidding procedures for the drug industry, because they get away with murder. And pharma has a lot of lobbies, a lot of lobbyists, and a lot of power. And there's very little bidding on drugs. We're the largest buyer of drugs in the world, and yet we don't bid properly, and we're going to start bidding, and we're going to save billions of dollars over a period of time.
So here we're seeing, you know, Donald Trump making the point that, look, our problems are not just limited to the typical manufacturing industry, the auto industry, the steel industry, those sorts of things. They're spreading. They're going well beyond that. We're seeing the pharmaceutical industry in trouble. We're even starting to see some of the tech industry experiencing difficulties. So there's other areas that we're starting to suffer. One more soundbite here real quick for us to listen to from that press conference yesterday, and pay close attention to this one. Josh, if we could go ahead and play number three, please.
So there's a great spirit going on right now, a spirit that many people have told me they've never seen before, ever. We're going to create jobs. I said that I will be the greatest jobs producer that God ever created, and I mean that. We're going to work very hard on that. We need certain amounts of other things, including a little bit of luck. But I think we're going to do a real job, and I'm very proud of what we've done, and we haven't even gotten there yet.
Wow, there you have it. That's typical, classic Donald Trump right there. The president says he's going to be the greatest job producer that God has ever created. Talk about setting the bar high. You do have to give it to him, though. He is ambitious. So lots of enthusiasm here from Donald Trump. And it is infectious. You know, in fact, you know, I'm feeling better just listening to him talk and the confidence he exudes. I'm feeling better right now. It makes me feel more positive. No wonder the stock market here is up. It's booming, on the edge of breaking records. People are out there borrowing and spending again. Debt levels are rising. Confidence and optimism are high. Things are looking up in America. So congratulations, Mr. Trump. Those are good things, and there have been some accomplishments. But, you know, the question always is it going to last? Will Trump be able to bring those jobs home? And so the question, that question really is, you know, how successful is he going to be? And just to give you an idea about that, Mike Shedlock over at Global Economic Analysis, he recently posted some comments and a slideshow from a fellow named Steen Jacobson. And Steen is the chief investment officer. He's the chief economist from Saxo Bank, which is headquartered over in Denmark. And this guy's a realist, and I've been following his work for a long time, and I think he's really pretty good. And this PowerPoint presentation from Steen concerning the Trump presidency and America's economy and where the global economy may be headed is pretty interesting and potentially pretty prophetic, because a lot of the trends he highlights in this slideshow, I think, do just line up very, very well with Bible prophecy. So pay attention if you're an investor, if you have your own 401k, if you're a policymaker or a community planner like President Obama was before he was a politician, before he became a senator, then pay attention, because these actions that the president is about to take, these things he's talking about, have some pretty big implication for not even for finance, but for social welfare and for even social unrest. There's some heavy topics that we'll be going through here, but as we're going through them, just ask yourself, where's this all headed? You know, where's this all leading to? What's the end game here? Because it's that end game that's important. And not to say that what happens along the way isn't important either. So if you'd like a title for today's show, it is Trump's Wall and World War III. Trump's Wall and World War III. In Steen's presentation, he talks about these major events that have happened within his generation, within his lifetime. Two of them that are in the past, and one that he says we're living through right now that most people don't even know about. So the first one he talks about, and I'll just read this from the note that was posted online there. He said, the first major event was 1989 and the Berlin Wall. The second major event was 2001 and those September 11th terrorist attacks. And then the third item was 2017, which he labels as the, quote, U.S. Wall. The U.S. Wall. And he goes on to say that all of them play into the present political and economic instability. He talks about how 1989 represented the opening of borders, the opening of the world, the fall of the repressive Soviet Iron Curtain. He talks about how in 2001, after those terrorist attacks, the political agenda turned inwards and towards a surveillance state and distrust and closed borders and, you know, things like the NSA and spying and those sorts of things. And then he says 2017 is the breaking of established rules, so much that I have done an analogy to the Nixon doctrine. And he talks about how what's going on today in 2017 can really be comparable to what was happening during Nixon's time. And he says, you know, point number one, back during Nixon's time, Nixon took the U.S. off the gold standard. He called that the Nixon shock. Nixon told allies to do more of their own defense. He calls that the Nixon doctrine. He says that Nixon had a 100% domestic agenda, very similar to what we're seeing today. He talks about how the White House and the Fed were constantly bashing each other, and how Nixon really influenced Fed policy. And then he says point five, where Nixon's Treasury Secretary famously told the Europeans at Rome in 1971 at the G7 meeting, it's our dollar, but your problem, talking about the U.S. dollar falling in value and losing its value. And then he says, Steen says, of course, Trump is not copying Nixon per se, but with an incoming administration, which is at best random on policies, I think it's worth trying to have a gauge on other historic major changes. I think Nixon, his administration in the 1970s are worth a look. And I would agree with what he says. There are a lot of parallels. And if you look at that slideshow, you'll see a lot of those parallels, parallels with today. And that's one of the reasons I think it's important. But another reason that I think adds a lot of weight to this analogy, to this comparison, is because of what Herbert W. Armstrong was writing about and warning about during the late 1960s and during the early 1970s while Nixon was in power. Because it's a lot of the same things, the same issues that we're dealing with today. The difference, of course, being that the problems are bigger now. The numbers are more gigantic and more enormous in scope and size. But as Steen points out, there's quite a few areas here where Trump may be dealing with those same types of issues that Nixon had to. So it is just interesting to look at the parallels and comparisons between these times. In terms of, you could look at the opposition party back in Nixon's day. He was fighting with what he felt was a Democratic Party that had been undermined and infiltrated by Marxists and socialists, and Nixon was dealing with those things, and I really think that's what the Watergate scandal was all about. And now today we have politicians who are open about their association with communists, and they're avowed socialists. They don't even hide it anymore. And Mr. Armstrong wrote a lot about this and talked about the danger of this. And then you can look at how Nixon battled with the Federal Reserve and how he pushed hard to influence their decisions. And Trump, here's Trump now. We have a president once again saying that he's going to audit the Fed because he doesn't think the Federal Reserve is working in America's the favor of American citizens. So here we have a Federal Reserve that could be becoming a lot less independent again. And then there was all that economic instability around Nixon's time too, right? He took the nation off the gold standard. The dollar plummeted in value. And he did that because of the trade issues that were going on at the time. America had a massive trade deficit with the world, just like America does today. So there's a lot of parallels, I think, that we can draw just by looking at the surface. We see a lot of those. They really do jump out at you. And if you take a look at Trump's response, the things that he's talking about, some of these also, you can see how he's following some of those same kind of footsteps, only could be in a much more dramatic way. So, for example, the one difference between today and Nixon's time is that the dollar's been very, very strong. Now, it started out strong in Nixon's time, but it started falling, and we could see the same thing happen here again. And Nixon did that to push down the value of the dollar so that our exporters, our industry, could sell more goods to foreigners. And if you take a look at who Trump's been appointing, he's been appointing trade hawks. He's been appointing people that are talking about, hey, we need to stop what's going on with China. We need to stop what's going on with Japan and these other nations. Just recently, I think it was on the 3rd, that Trump appointed a man named Robert Lightsither. And he's going to be his chief trade negotiator. And this guy will be responsible for negotiating better deals. But what's interesting about him, this man, he worked under President Reagan to reduce America's trade deficit at the time when Japan was just eating America's lunch. And the question is, well, how did he do it? Well, one of the biggest things he did to help America during Reagan's time, or in what he viewed as helping America, was he worked to push down the value of the dollar. He devalued the dollar. Once again, just looking at the symptoms, dealing with the symptoms of our manufacturing problems. And it did give America a temporary boost. But he devalued the dollar. He took a lot of trade from our trade partners and caused a lot of tension with some of our allies. And there's Peter Navarro. He's a Trump appointee. He's going to lead a new White House office that Trump has created that is going to oversee American trade and industrial policy. And Navarro here, he's a California professor out there at a school, and he's a very vocal critic of China and our trade deals with China. And he's seen as being very hostile to China. So all these similarities that we're talking about here could be cause for an alarm in and of themselves. These are big issues that could be changing in America. And maybe some of this would be for the good. Certainly over the short term, some of this may be for the good. The question is, how will it be for the longer term here? Now, that said, there's also one other similarity I want to talk about here and I want to focus on. And this one's a biggie. There's a big similarity between Nixon's time and the Trump time here. But first, before we get onto that, we need to take a break. You have been listening to KPCG.fm online or 101.3 here on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. I am today's host, Robert Morley, filling in for Stephen Fleury. We've been talking about President Trump's press conference yesterday and what it means for America. It is time for a break, a quick break here, but we'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back there. You heard that that promo there. I'm talking about some of these dangers that are going on today within the current administration. Well, they aren't limited to this current administration. There are some big things that are going on today in America. And we have been talking about some of the similarities between President-elect Donald Trump and the things that happened under President Richard Nixon, some of those things he had to deal with. And we've been paying particular attention to several items that were highlighted by Saxo Bank's Steve Keen, because they really do parallel a lot of the items that the late Herbert W. Armstrong warned about for so many years. And before the break, we were about to discuss what could be one of the biggest similarities between Trump and Nixon, and that is the inward focus that Steen says took place under Nixon, and that appears could very well take place under President Trump. And with Trump, you've already seen some of those kind of comments, in particular about NATO and insinuating that America would only intervene to help our allies if they paid their bills. Nixon said something similar when he told America's allies that they needed to do more for their own defense. And you see that inward focus militarily with Trump as well. And with that, I have another soundbite I'd like to hear from President Trump from that press conference yesterday, because I just think it really does illustrate that inward focus that we're going to see going forward out of this administration. So, Josh, if you would please play that soundbite number 3 from yesterday's press conference.
Well, if I can save jobs, for instance, I was doing individual companies, and people said, well, but that's only one company, like we did a good job with Carrier. And I want to thank United Technologies, which owns Carrier, but we saved close to 1,000 jobs. And they were gone, and Mike Pence and his staff really helped us a lot. But those were jobs. That was a tough one, because they announced a year and a half before that they were leaving. So it's always tough when they're building a plant. It's a little tougher than before they start or before they make an announcement. So I want to thank United Technologies. But We've been meeting with a lot of companies, but what really is happening is the word is now out that when you want to move your plant to Mexico or some other place, and you want to fire all of your workers from Michigan and Ohio and all these places that I won for good reason, it's not going to happen that way anymore. You want to move your plant, and you think, as an example, you're going to build that plant in Mexico, and you're going to make your air conditioners or your cars or whatever you're making, and you're going to sell it through what will be a very, very strong border, not a weak border like it is now. We don't even have a border. It's an open sieve. But you're going to sell through a very strong border. Not going to happen. You're going to pay a very large border tax. So if you want to move to another country, and if you want to fire all of our great American workers that got you there in the first place, you can move from Michigan to Tennessee and to North Carolina and South Carolina. You can move from South Carolina back to Michigan. You can do anywhere. You got a lot of states at play, a lot of competition. So it's not like, oh, gee, I'm taking the competition. We got a lot of places you can move. And I don't care, as long as it's within the United States, the borders of the United States. There will be a major border tax on these companies that are leaving and getting away with murder. And if our politicians had what it takes, they would have done this years ago, and you'd have millions more workers right now in the United States that are 96 million really wanting a job and they can't get. You know that story, the real number. That's the real number. So that's the way it is.
Yeah, so here's Trump. He's saying, look, no more taking advantage of America. America first. Buy American. No more jobs leaving the country. No more crossing the border and then just coming back through with the sieve and avoiding all the taxes and those sorts of things. So Trump here, he's highlighting, you know, a lot of problems and what these big companies have been doing and been allowed to do, and more importantly, encouraged to do by the laws of this land and by just the economic conditions in this country, and that they have been doing for years has just been devastating for our workers. He says, no more. That's going to end. But look, you know, just because what those companies have done is bad and has had a lot of negative effects, a lot of people out there are taking this as an indictment against free trade and against freedom and against capitalism. Look, free trade and capitalism, they have brought more prosperity to more people than any other economic system that's been tried by mankind yet. And really, it is the best of an imperfect system. But these words that we're hearing out of Trump are really starting to encapsulate a sentiment that is growing within America and across this world that free markets and that free trade is a negative, that it needs to be replaced with something else. And now America, you know, never really has had free trade, you know, NAFTA and the TPP and the Asian Pacific Partnership and all these big trade deals we talk about that are sold as free trade. The reality is that isn't free trade. That's more about big companies and lobbyists protecting themselves, protecting their industries, and trying to use governments to gain advantages over the competition. That isn't free trade. We've never actually really had actual free trade. But so we're starting to see a backlash growing from that. And the reality is that backlash is grounded in things that have been happening on the ground. We know that America's manufacturing industry has been sold down the river, and Trump is absolutely right about that, and big business is exploiting the system. But look, if they didn't do that, if they didn't exploit the laws, the competition would. You know, if General Motors or didn't go down to Mexico and Ford did and Chrysler did, well, you know what we would have? Well, we'd have eventually, you know, the Ford and the Chrysler vehicles, you know, the cheaper labor, the less regulations, all this government regulations that's adding cost to business, they'd eventually be producing less expensive vehicles, higher quality vehicles, and then they'd be coming out ahead of the competition that stayed behind in America. So there's these problems, there's causes to these problems, and that's what America faces here. But what's the solution? What's the solution to all of this? You know, what is Trump going to do about it? Let's play that last soundbite, because this is where I think it starts to get dangerous for the world here. Let's play soundbite number 5 from President Trump's press conference yesterday.
On the fence. It's not a fence, it's a wall. You just misreported it. We're going to build a wall. I could wait about a year and a half until we finish our negotiations with Mexico, which will start immediately after we get to office, but I don't want to wait. Mike Pence is leading an effort to get final approvals through various agencies and through Congress for the wall to begin. I don't feel like waiting a year or a year and a half. We're going to start building. Mexico, in some form, and there are many different forms, will reimburse us, and they will reimburse us for the cost of the wall. That will happen, whether it's a tax or whether it's a payment, probably less likely that it's a payment, but it will happen. So remember this, okay? I would say we are going to build a wall, and people would go crazy. I would then say, who's going to pay for the wall? And people would all scream out, 25, 30,000 people, because nobody's ever had crowds like Trump has had. You know that. You don't like to report that, but that's okay. Okay, now he agrees. Finally, he agrees. But I say, who's going to pay for the wall? And they will scream out, Mexico. Now, reports went out last week, oh, Mexico's not going to pay for the wall because of a reimbursement. What's the difference? I want to get the wall started. I don't want to wait a year and a half until I make my deal with Mexico. So, and we probably will have a deal sooner than that. And by the way, Mexico has been so nice, so nice. I respect the government of Mexico. I respect the people of Mexico. I love the people of Mexico. I have many people from Mexico working for me. They're phenomenal people. The government of Mexico is terrific. I don't blame them for what's happened. I don't blame them for taking advantage of the United States. I wish our politicians were so smart. Mexico has taken advantage of the United States. I don't blame the representatives and various presidents, etc., of Mexico. What I say is we shouldn't have allowed that to happen.
So here's Trump saying build the wall. He's going to build that border wall with Mexico, and Mexico, one way or the other, is going to pay for it. And I think this is just very symbolic of what a Trump presidency is going to look like. It's going to be very, very different from past administrations. But this idea of walls, of barriers, you know, blockades, of fences, of barricades, of fortifications, of dividers, I think all of that this idea of a wall is an indicator, and I think it could be a definer of a Trump administration. The wall. Fortress America. And I think that this is, this is, according to Steen's List, that last similarity between the Trump administration and Richard Nixon. And I want to focus a little bit on this because this Fortress America, this idea of building walls, could escalate into a really dangerous global trend, because in fact it's already a trend that's in place. We are seeing walls going up around the world. We're seeing economic barriers going up, and if Trump follows through on his threats, it's going to lead to trade tension and trade war. We could see an outbreak of trade war again. Stephen Roach, he's the former chief economist at Morgan Stanley. Earlier this year, he was warning about exactly that. He's noticing that the annual growth in trade volume around this world over the last 7 years is half of what it's been in the historical recent average. We're seeing growth in global trade slowing, and he's blaming politicians for that and political resistance on that. He's saying there's a backlash against globalization. Actually, Global Trade Alert, their most recent report that came out, it pretty much just confirms Roach's assessment. Actually, it says it's worse than the way Roach wrote about it. They say that global trade has actually plateaued since January 2015. So we've seen no growth in global trade for more than a year now, working on 2 years. And those authors say that, you know, that's a virtually unprecedented event, except during times of global recession. But of course, we're told we're not in global recession. The economy's great. Everything's hunky-dory. Well, then the question is, why has global trade plateaued? And according to those authors, it's a reflection of a distinct rise in protectionist trade measures. We're seeing this global trend where nations are starting to turn inward and protect themselves. Robert Aziz Bido, he's the director general of the World Trade Organization, and he recently said, quote, "This is a time fraught for global trade. In many countries, trade is under siege, raising the specter of protectionism. Alongside the anti-trade rhetoric, there is the notion that we have reached peak trade, or that globalization has ground to a halt. You know, as a listener, I hope you realize what this means, because it means that nations are adopting more restrictive trade policies, and this is almost always a negative in the short term. You know, wall building, you know, economic and otherwise, this is a form of economic warfare. This is something that can quickly escalate. A lot of times we hear about tariffs and taxes and things, and we think, oh, well, you know, it's just politicians doing their thing. But no, look, historically, this is dangerous stuff. This kind of stuff can quickly amp up. This kind of stuff can quickly snowball. And we need to be watching these sort of things, because historically, these are the precursors to war. Trade wars are the precursors to actual shooting wars. And Trump has told the world what he's going to do. He's very, very plain about this. And if he follows through, what remains to be seen is what our trade partners do in return. How strong will be the retaliation? And the great recession, the Great Depression that happened in the 1930s, that could be back quicker than most people realize. But listen, the reason we're talking about this is because these things are all prophesied in the Bible. The Bible does talk about how America is going to be besieged, how its economic trade partners are going to turn on them. And there is going to be a trade war. Just like a city is besieged, you know, and people are trapped within those city walls, the same sort of thing is coming on America. And sooner than most people realize that, our trade partners, China, Japan, Germany, they are going to engage in trade war with us. And it's going to be a nasty one and a bad one, the worst one America's ever experience. And that's prophesied in your Bible. That comes out of your Bible. Here's what Herbert W. Armstrong wrote in a 1968 co-worker letter. So he was writing this as Nixon was campaigning for the presidency. He said, "Those of you who truly believe the prophecies of your Bible know such an economic collapse is prophesied to happen. For years we've been saying on the World Tomorrow program and on the pages of the Plain Truth magazine that World War III has already begun, but that it is presently economic in nature. We have shown how God prophesied a virtual trade war will get underway against the United States and Britain, and how our national economies will falter and then collapse." And he goes on to talk about the rush on gold by European speculators and coming off the gold standard and how that impacted America. And then Mr. Armstrong says, "What does this all mean?" And he says, "It means that at any time now, you could suddenly awake to find that you have only half the money you thought you possessed, or that your purchasing power has been drastically reduced overnight. Should the dollar collapse, it could well mean a repetition of the disastrous depression that strangled the economy, the economic world, in 1929. Says, as never before, your money is in danger. And that's where we are. And listeners, that's where we are today. We are back at that same point in history. We are at the point where we could wake up overnight and see that our money has been devalued. Those dollars in your bank accounts are worthless. And this is some pretty dramatic stuff, but trade war is coming. And I think the comparisons with Nixon are very apt, but ultimately they lead to a totally different conclusion here. Trump's talking about walls and tariffs and barriers, but what he's really signaling is a trade war. A trade war. Here's what Mr. Armstrong wrote in a 1971 personal, and this was just 2 years into Nixon's presidency, and I think this is just apt for today, so pay attention to this. He says, "In my meeting with Prime Minister of Japan, Prime Minister Sato of Japan in December, he mentioned the past economic trade wars as one of the factors leading to World War II. And right now, a new trade war is a definite threat. This could affect not only every person in the United States and Canada, but all the peoples of the world. And Mr. Armstrong, he went on to talk about how American workers are the richest in the world, but because of human nature, and they were now actually working against their own interests. Big labor was destroying the industry and the manufacturing in America. And he saw the writing on the wall for Detroit and the automakers and just how it was destroying themselves. They were shooting themselves in their foot. But he also talked about how, you know, American workers were competing against foreign labor. And due to greed, American workers were causing a lot of problems on themselves. And then he made these interesting comments. He said, he talked about loyalty in the United States. And he talked about, let me just read this. He said, how about company loyalty in the United States? The question sounds like a joke. When even the company union, he's talking about a company here, one of these companies, had agreed to a temporary 20-week, 10% pay cut in order to save their jobs by keeping the Hamilton Watch Company in business, some 250 dissident employees hired a lawyer to block the pay cut by court action, even though it threatened to put their company out of business. He says, when President Nixon and Secretary Shultz suggested that unions should moderate their demands to prevent pricing their employers out of the business, a nationally known labor leader retorted that no union leader would scale down his demands, even in the national interest. The attitude in America seems to be, what? Me act in the national interest? And then he goes on, Mr. Armstrong goes on to compare that to Japanese workers and how they've been brought up to put the needs of their nation first as above themselves. And he says, do not misunderstand me. I am completely in favor of what is in the best interest of the American worker, but I want my readers to stop and think, because our fellow American workmen are not working in their own best interest. He says, look where these trends are leading. The American workers are trying to get all they can get and at the same time giving as little as they can get away with, even to giving nothing. And then he talks about what's going to happen. He says, either we start raising high tariff barriers against other countries, starting a trade war, which in time will trigger a nuclear war that will destroy us, or American workers are going to have to meet the competition of workers in other countries by lowering their living standards. Obviously, American workers are not going to do the latter. And if they don't, well, the handwriting is on the national wall. Look, people, look, American worker, we're in the same situation today as we were then. And Mr. Armstrong saying, look, the alternative to these to sacrificing is trade barriers and tariffs and taxes and World War III. And that's a scary thing to think about, but that is coming. World War III is coming, and it's going to be here more quickly than we realize. And this wall that Trump's going to build, this inward focus, this resorting to tariffs and taxes and trade barriers, this reduction in globalization that we're seeing here, all these things are just reinforcing this global trend that's already in play, and it's making it that much more dangerous. Now, back in 1971, Mr. Armstrong warned. He said, look, the Japanese are building an army. They could quickly have a massive army to put unemployed people to work in if a trade war does break out. Well, look, we need to be thinking about China today. China's 1.2 billion people. They're the world's biggest manufacturer. And if a trade war starts, yeah, they will be impacted. But they will also have millions and millions of unemployed workers to be put to work in an army. And that, too, is Bible prophecy. So, brethren, war is coming. War is coming, and trade wars and trade barriers are not the solution. The solution is a totally complete different opposite of the spectrum thing from walls and barriers. Believe it or not, and you don't hear this too much on the trumpet, but the solution is one world government. Now, we're not talking about the one world government that most people think is coming, you know, with the Bilderbergers or some conspiracy theory, but the government of God. Ultimately, that is what it's going to take to solve these things. A government of God, a government working for all people on this earth, and this government is coming sooner than you think. And that really is a good thing. And that really is something that all peoples of the world can look forward to. That's coming sooner than most of us can think. And we can all be very, very thankful for that. But first, some tough times before we get there. Well, we're coming towards the end here of the Trumpet Daily radio program. It's been great to be with you here today. Keep watching the news. Keep following our president-elect. Some big things happening here in the world. Big things happening in America. So tune in tomorrow. Stephen Fleury will be back, so you can look forward to that. We are just about out of time here, so you are listening to KPCG.FM and 101.3 on the FM dial. A big thanks to Stephen Fleury for the opportunity to speak with you today. And a big thanks goes out to our technical team for all their help, to Josh Sloan and Dwight Falk. Much appreciated. Have yourselves a very great day.